From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. They said he couldn't close the deal, but he squeaked it out in Iowa. And last night, Republican Mitt Romney made it two in a row by a wide margin.
Thank you, New Hampshire. Tonight, we made history.
Funny thing, though, Romney's challengers are not clearing out. They're racing on to South Carolina, Perry, Santorum, Gingrich, Huntsman, and last night's undeterred second-place finisher, Ron Paul.
I called Governor Romney a short while ago before he gave his talk and congratulate him because he certainly had a clear-cut victory, but we're nibbling at his heels.
The candidate who says nibbling this hour on Point, a big Romney win and a change of latitude. As the Republican primary race heads south, you can join the conversation. Is Mitt the man? Is it over? Not over? Is he right on President Obama? Is he blowing smoke? What would you expect from a President Romney? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're just back from New Hampshire yesterday, and with a great panel here today, north to south from New York, Rich Lowry is with us. Syndicated columnist, editor of the National Review, swings a big stick in GOP circles. Rich Lowry, welcome. Great to have you.
I'm glad to be holding down the north up here.
Okay. From Washington, Chris Siliza is here. Writes the politics blog The Fix for the Washington Post, covers the White House for the newspaper and website Savvy as they come. Chris, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And from Tampa, Florida, Susan McManus joins us, professor of government and international affairs at the University of South Florida. She knows voting from the south up. Susan McManus, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Nice warm greetings from Florida.
Good. Wonderful. All the way there. Rich Lowry, well, let's come first to you. Out of Iowa, it was Rick Santorum with his game on. Here we are out of New Hampshire. Is it game over or not, Rich?
I wouldn't quite say game over, but this is a big victory for Mitt Romney. Obviously, to tie in Iowa or win narrowly and then win in New Hampshire has never been done by someone who's not a sitting president on the Republican side of the aisle. You look into the exit polls and the demographics of this victory, and it was extremely broad. He won born-agains, he won non-born-agains, he won Catholics, he won Protestants, he won people support the Tea Party, people neutral on the Tea Party. He won all education groups. He won moderates. He won somewhat conservatives. He won very conservatives. So it was quite a broad victory. Obviously, it's good home territory for him that he had been very careful to tend and to build up as a firewall. So you can maybe discount it a little bit, but then you look at the other competitors, and the field is fractured in exactly the way the Romney campaign couldn't have planned it any better. I happen to think that Rick Santorum is the non-Romney with the most potential. I thought after Iowa he'd bump up just on his Iowa showing alone to high doubles digits in New Hampshire. That didn't happen. The most he got was low double digits, and then his momentum stalled and maybe reversed a little bit, perhaps based on these long Socratic dialogues he had with some college students about gay marriage, which reinforced the image of him overemphasizing those kind of issues. So now you go into South Carolina with Romney having a very good chance to win there on the McCain plan, which is get about 33% of the vote and hope the rest of the vote is fractured in exactly the right way.
Chris Siliza, I mean, you look at what's going on with this campaign, and sometimes it doesn't look so much like a primary as like an Olympics, you know, where there's a place on the podium for everybody, and the silver and bronze winners and right on down, they're not leaving the stage, Chris. Why is everybody hanging in? How do you read that, Chris?
Well, you know, because I think in some cases, first of all, the answer is different for each one. In some cases, it's because they see a path to victory, or they see at least a chance to return to relevance. That's South Carolina for Rick Perry, maybe. Definitely a possibility for Rick Santorum, for Newt Gingrich. Then there are people who are, or I should say, a person who is kind of doing his own thing, which is Ron Paul. Ron Paul has no reason to drop out. He's now finished third in Iowa, second in New Hampshire. He has a committed core of support in virtually every state, though I would suggest it's smaller, certainly, in South Carolina than it was in Iowa or New Hampshire. And, you know, Ron Paul is really running in a lot of ways. This is an issue-based campaign that is not winning, I don't think, is the ultimate end goal here. It's influencing the debate in some meaningful way. And I would say, my guess is that Ron Paul stays in the race even after Mitt Romney, and if Mitt Romney locks up the nomination, that Ron Paul stays in. John Huntsman, to me, is the one that's the most baffling. A relatively distant third-place finish in a state that he spent all of his
weeks
time,
and months and time
his,
on time.
All
yeah.
of his money. He tried, I thought, somewhat ineffectively to spin it as a victory last night. You know, he said third place is a ticket to ride, quoting the Beatles.
Right.
Maybe, you know, the South Carolina electorate is going to be significantly more conservative than New Hampshire. Huntsman is not a good fit there. I don't see it. So he's the one I think staying in is the most baffling. But he is personally wealthy, comes from a very wealthy family, and therefore doesn't have to worry about going into debt and the sort of things that would happen to a flagging campaign who doesn't have personal money.
A billionaire papa who invented the clamshell, what styrofoam box we get Big Macs in. Susan McManus, give us your South Up view of this. You've got a whole lot of candidates coming down toward you, South Carolina, then Florida. They're not dropping out after New Hampshire. They're hanging in. Rick Perry's already been down there. Are they smoking something, or do they still have a shot from the conservative vantage at Mitt Romney?
Well, Romney's looking pretty strong, but all of them are going to play in Florida, I believe. Many of them have opened offices. Their mailers going out. There are some radio ads and television ads already up, and the candidates periodically circle through here, as Floridians have come to expect. So it's still open. A lot of people still undecided, but a new poll out this morning shows that Romney would beat Obama in Florida.
Does that mean that do you expect in South Carolina, here's the somebody's ABC News is calling it the Psalm, P-S-A-L-M, before the storm, the South Carolina evangelicals look at this. Is South Carolina going to rally behind him just because, they see a poll that says he would beat Obama?
I think that there's a lot of parallels. I equate the Iowa vote and South Carolina vote as being similar, and Florida being a little bit more equivalent to New Hampshire. But of all the states, Florida is the one where fiscal conservatism is going to be key, front and center. We're the one who has the worst economy of the first four states. And South Carolina, I think, will be a little bit different demographic than Florida's, where people here are extremely concerned about electability because Florida Republicans had their pride hurt when the state turned blue in 08, and they're determined not to have that happen again.
Rich Lowry, you've written that even in New Hampshire, this is just you writing just a few hours ago, I think, Romney's campaign is all technique and no music. Now, I want to ask you about that in the context of his speech, which he jumped out very early, even before, I don't even know if the polls were closed yet, to claim his victory. Here he is taking that aim that he pounded over and over in his speech against President Obama.
We know that the future of this country is better than 8 or 9% unemployment. It's better than $15 trillion in debt. It's better than the misguided policies and broken promises of the last 3 years and the failed leadership of one man. Yeah. The president has run out of ideas. Yeah. Now he's running out of excuses. Yeah. And tonight, tonight we're asking the good people of South Carolina to join the citizens of New Hampshire and make 2012 the year he runs out of time.
Mitt Romney with a whole lot of kids and grandkids and you name it, a great big pile there and a big smile on his face as he was punching hard against the president last night. But Rich Lowry, you've been writing just recently the unsatisfying Mitt Romney talking about speeches in New Hampshire, smaltz piled on top of saccharin in a perfect storm of substance-less sentimentality. He was punching hard last night, or was that schmaltz to you, Rich?
Well, for a Romney speech, it was fantastic, okay?
But I'm
grading on a curve there.
Okay.
You know, his Iowa speech was horrible, partly because they had rolled out the teleprompters and I imagine had this kind of speech ready to go, and then they realized, maybe we're not going to win here and we're not going to know for a long time, so we're just going to give a version of the substanceless stump speech,
which Romney hurried
through, and it was really dreadful. This, you know, it showed he's a consensus Republican, and he's going to hit on, you know, all the standard, straight down the line Republican themes, with an emphasis especially on the state of the economy and the broader direction of our economy and society. Do we want to go in a European welfare state direction, or, as Romney put it, return to a more traditional American model. And I think because of the attacks on Bain, which he responded to, that was the only nod to his rivals, where he spoke of some desperate Republicans, which is, I think, a pretty apt description of them, where Romney may end up having, by circumstance and because of those attacks, to make a more full-throated and philosophical defense of the free market and capitalism than he might have been inclined to do otherwise.
And he's going to, I guess to you, that's going to be, that. Maybe there's some music in that, music that others were pushing back against pretty hard with looting and vultures and all the rest.
Yeah, I just don't think Romney is very capable of music. So at least I'm not hearing it. But yeah, that's better than the alternative. And I think the attacks from Gingrich and Perry have been shameful. They both know better. They don't believe a word they're saying. Certainly Gingrich doesn't, but they're doing it out of sheer desperation and stifled ambition. What you can say for it on the positive side of the ledger is, you know, this is going to be a version of what Romney gets in the fall if he's the nominee, so better to litigate it a little bit in advance. But I think Gingrich especially is on a suicide mission and is hurting himself more than he's going to hurt Romney.
Chris Saliza, we've just got a second before the break, but European-style welfare state? I mean, has Obama's been really that different from, I don't know, Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 2 on that score?
Remember that Mitt Romney isn't the Republican nominee yet. If he was already the Republican nominee, I think he'd be moving away from that a little. But remember, that speech in New Hampshire comes 10 days before South Carolina, a very conservative electorate. If Mitt Romney knows if he wins there, this nomination fight is effectively over. So he is still positioning for those conservatives in the primary.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the GOP field. Mitt Romney in the lead, headed out of New Hampshire, headed south, and what they're prescribing for the country. Rich Lowry is with us, editor of the National Review from New York and Washington. Chris Saliza is with us. He writes the politics blog The Fix for the Washington Post, covers the White House for the newspaper and website there. Susan McManus is with us from the University of South Florida, joining us today from Tampa. Big view of what's going on from the south up. Skeeter in Huntington, Vermont. Skeeter, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. Mm-hmm. I think that Mr. Romney will be facing a Southern surprise because we need to take sight of two things. One, since 1980, no Republican presidential candidate has won the nomination without winning the Southern primaries. The last one who did it was Gerald Ford in 1976, and he beat Ronald Reagan primarily because he had the advantage of being the incumbent. Remember that 4 years ago, Mitt Romney lost every single primary in the South. In fact, he did very badly in the South. He finished a distant third in most of the Southern primaries to McCain and Mike Huckabee. We tend to forget that since 1964, particularly among Southern Republicans, there has been and continues to be, in my opinion, a very deep antipathy toward politicians from the Northeast. And this applies to both Republicans and Democrats.
And that's Mitt Romney all the way. Massachusetts governor, as Newt Gingrich and others never tire of pointing out to us. Skeeter, you know your stuff. Let us look at it here. Susan, let me come to you first. I mean, on the other hand, we've got online here, Brett writes, the Republican Party is like a cheating fiancé. They know they'll have to marry Romney eventually, but they want to have a fling with every other possible candidate until that day. But there's Skeeter in Vermont, Susan, saying, you know what, Northeast candidate just isn't going to sell in the South, and the resistance is baked in the cake. Does the steamroller effect overcome that, Susan, or not?
I think it does to a certain extent. And let's face it, a lot of people, they think Romney, they don't necessarily think Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. They see more governor. And you do have a greater support for governors getting the nomination than you do members of Congress. We've all seen the ratings of Congress right now.
Sure.
In fact, it's going to be very difficult for many of them to get reelected, no matter about redistricting. But I think it's his gubernatorial experience and the fact that they do understand that in the South, and particularly states like Florida, the diverse big states, you have to win over independents. And Romney tends to do better among independent voters than do the other candidates.
So independents, but of course, Chris in New Hampshire, they had a great big role because they can just roll out and vote on primary day. Not so in South Carolina.
Right. I mean, the thing about I was looking at the numbers, the exit polling in Iowa versus New Hampshire, and the electorates are just so fundamentally different. One is just so much more moderate. 47% of people in New Hampshire, according to exit polls, describe them as moderate or liberal. That was 17%. In Iowa. Look, independents made up 47% of the vote in New Hampshire last night. It's a significant chunk. I thought one thing that was fascinating, though, is the candidate. We all thought if independents make up a big chunk, that's really good news for John Huntsman, who had made a big appeal, mm-hmm. kind of this centrist, sensible centrist appeal. 32% of Ron Paul, he was the highest vote getter among independents. 32%. Romney got 29%. Huntsman got 23%. And that, again, I don't want to harp too much on John Huntsman, and I do think that that suggests that the way forward is not terribly clear here for Huntsman. I do think
terribly clear sounds quite generous.
I'm being kind. I am being kind. It's the day after. He's still got 10 days, but I think it's difficult. I do think Skeeter is right, though, Tom, that. Since 1980, which is when South Carolina moved its primary up to the front of the nominating calendar, they have voted for the person who has become the nominee every single time. Though Rich mentioned this earlier, while Mitt Romney did very, very badly in South Carolina in 2008, there is the McCain model, which is that you get the establishment country club conservative vote. You consolidate that. That's between 30 and 33%, maybe 35% on a good day in South Carolina. And the conservative vote splinters. In 08, it splintered between Mike Huckabee, who got 30%, and Fred Thompson, who got 16%. We've got Rick Perry, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, and potentially a little bit in there, Ron Paul, all competing for that vote. Mm-hmm. The only person competing for that establishment country club vote with Mitt Romney is John Huntsman, and as we've talked about, I don't know how credible he's going to be.
Splinters versus Romney in a way, and that sounds good for Romney. Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Don's calling. Don, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Yes, I'm from Iowa, and we were disappointed here, I think, that Huntsman wasn't more actively campaigning here. I think he has a voice. I feel all the discussions this morning about Ron Paul and Huntsman and the others, but I see that Ron Paul probably drags large amounts of votes away from Huntsman. Earlier this morning, someone talked about Ron Paul and said that you had to dig in deep to understand his message. It took time to accept him because there's underlying issues. But I think that's the same way with Huntsman. Huntsman's proposal on taxes could result in a fair tax, and I have a firm belief that all the issues that we talk about, spending and spending can't be resolved, I believe, until taxes are fair. Taxes are not fair. Huntsman's proposal would make them fair. I believe that has to be thought about and considered, and underlying issues have to be dealt with.
Why do you think he didn't do better than in New Hampshire, Don, where he had spent so much time?
Well, because I think a lot of the people who, the independents who went over to Ron Paul should have been listening to Huntsman. I think if Paul hadn't had the position he had there, I think Huntsman would have been a strong second, might have even tied.
Interesting. A Paul Huntsman continuum. Don, thanks. Let me get one more right here. Needham, Massachusetts. Ali, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Tom. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that I do agree with the splintering of the conservative vote. So this time around, Romney may actually be able to pull off the southern states, at least a couple of them, mainly speaking South Carolina. So I'm just wondering if this is the time, perhaps, that the conservative wing of the party or the non-Romney wing of the party should actually have a meeting between the three gentlemen, mainly speaking Governor Perry, Rick Santorum, and Speaker Gingrich, and with perhaps presence of Jim DeMint as a power broker to come to some sort of agreement between these gentlemen and have one voice against Romney.
Now that's interesting, Ali. Rich Lowry, let us bring that to you. I mean, you know these circles, and after the Iowa result, there was one such meeting where conservatives got together real quick. I think it was in Texas to say, how do we consolidate against Romney? How do we rally around one conservative candidate? Can you imagine that, Rich? Is there a boiler room where that meeting could take place and pop out one challenger?
These conversations are going on, and there are meetings. I think
for conservatives very opposed to Mitt Romney, and I'm not as opposed as some of my friends, but for me it just seems obvious. You call on Gingrich to quit the race, but to keep his super PAC active, and you call on him to exhort the people running his super PAC to make a conservative case against Mitt Romney instead of just banging away on Bain. You call on Perry to exit the race, and then you rally around Santorum, and you do everything you can to drag Santorum over the top in South Carolina. Because, I mean, South Carolina just could be the last bottleneck on the way to the nomination for Mitt Romney. So it's going to be too late to try to do this in Florida, or to keep stroking your chin and thinking about who the best conservative alternative is 11 days from now. You got to do it now. I just doubt it's going to happen. I'm not sure that Gingrich or Perry would be amenable to such an appeal.
Yeah.
But to me, at a tactical level, that just seems obvious.
Would the money do that? Sheldon Adelson, the huge casino mogul, came in with millions for Gingrich just in the last few days. Is he the kind of guy who's amenable to say, oh, never mind, we'll go to Santorum?
Well, he can just keep doing what he's doing now, pounding away at Mitt Romney. And it may, I don't know, Sheldon, I don't know how much that his sentiment is pro-Gingrich and how much of it is anti-Romney. But look, this is, as I think Chris was alluding to earlier, everyone has their incentive to stay in. Perry thinks, well, I'm the Southerner, maybe it'll come back to me and people will forget how poorly I performed in the debates. Newt figures I got a lot of money, and besides that, I got a vendetta. And Santorum thinks, I almost won Iowa, and I'm the most plausible of these non-Romneys. So they all have an incentive, which I'm not into game theory, but maybe some sort of prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's just absolutely the best possible scenario for Mitt Romney.
Rich, you're in the thick of things, and it sounds as though you wouldn't mind if they got together around one conservative challenger here. But we've got a listener online who says that with Romney pushing out front so far in New Hampshire, saying Axelrod's, that is David Axelrod, President Obama's top political advisor, worst fear has been realized. The nominee is Romney, and it's over early. Do you see that as the biggest threat to the sitting president, Romney, and decided early?
Well, I think it's pretty clear to me that David Axelrod and Obama's operation consider Romney the most serious threat. I was at a meeting organized by Bloomberg, not the mayor, but the news organization, David Axelrod and some journalists 3 or 4 weeks ago up here in New York, and it was really when Newt was starting to surge, almost at the peak of his surge. And you couldn't get Axelrod to say nary a discouraging word about Newt Gingrich, but he just kept pounding and pounding and pounding away at Mitt Romney. And I think their strategy, they wanted to play the Gray Davis game, who was a very weak incumbent governor who basically helped select his opponent in the Republican primary by pounding away at Richard Reardon, who was a little more moderate, and helping get Bill Simon, a friend of mine, a good conservative stalwart, get him nominated, but probably too conservative for California, and then winning on that basis. I think they would have liked to take Romney down in the primary, but so far it's not working out.
Nobody volunteering to step out last night. Here was Rick Santorum, focused on South Carolina, as he came in pretty far back in New Hampshire. Said his message was about believing in the American people.
We took that message here to New Hampshire. We took it talking about our manufacturing plan, talking about what we're going to do to grow this economy. And we took it to talk about faith and family as the bedrock of our society.
Faith and family and believing in Newt Gingrich not going anywhere either, except South Carolina.
This campaign is going to go on to South Carolina. And we're going to offer the American people something very different. We're going to offer them an opportunity to participate in very dramatic, very fundamental change in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, yeah. And even John Huntsman, third place. He's still on the podium at these Olympics. Ticket to ride, he said.
I'd say third place is a ticket to ride, ladies and gentlemen.
In the middle of that, we've got Newt Gingrich saying very dramatic, very fundamental change in Washington, D.C. Susan McManus, when you size these guys up, if that's what Republicans want, and certainly Mitt Romney talked that game last night, at least kind of, who's got the very dramatic, very substantial change in their pocket, Susan, to your eye?
Well, it's you know, all of them have some element. And that's one of the things that's come out in polls is that people would like a composite candidate, but that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is trite somewhat, but it really does come down to the electability issue versus the ideological purity concern. And that is why states like Florida and Michigan and some of the other big states that bucked the primary calendar entered and felt so strongly that the real test is going to be in those kinds of states, that these states ahead of Florida or Michigan are pretty unrepresentative of what's going to be happening at large. But there's something else we haven't talked much mm-hmm. about, and that's the age differential, because Florida, unlike some of the polls out which cast it as a senior state, recent registration analyses show that 52% of our voters are over 50 and 48% under. But the catch is that you have that enthusiasm gap. Younger voters are not as interested in this election. The older voters are going to be dominant. And repeatedly in every survey I've looked at, they're leaning towards Romney. What do they like about him? The electability issue. And they're perfectly okay with his fiscal conservatism message, but it's electability the rest of the way. That's why Florida, again, will be the first big test of only Republicans. Every Republican activist in the other states understands that if a Republican ultimately wants to win the White House, they have got to carry Florida. So that's why this primary, I think, will be the best test, unlike the others. And we'll be able to see again once and for all whether fiscal conservatism or social conservatism is the mantra that Republicans across the country are looking for in their nominee this year.
Of course, you talk about young voters. Ron Paul had those in spades in New Hampshire. And when he stepped to the mic last night, he wasn't talking so much about electability as big ideas. Here he was in Manchester, New Hampshire, celebrating second place.
There is no doubt that this whole effort that we are involved in will not go unnoticed, let me tell you. I think the intellectual revolution that's going on now to restore liberty in this country is well on its way, and there's no way they're going to stop the momentum that we have started.
Philip, calling from Henderson, Kentucky. Philip, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, well, I hear Ron Paul there, and that was my comment. You know, I just feel like everyone's wants everyone to drop out and rally around Santorum. When Ron Paul, you know, I feel he has more to offer. He may be a bit extreme, but that may be what's needed now.
And you're all for it. Rich Lowry, where does the Ron Paul energy go here? Second place finish there. New Hampshire, quite amenable to him, it's obvious. And a strong second place, though well back behind Romney. Where does that energy go, Rich?
Well, I think Ron Paul is just going to keep on going for the duration. And the ideal scenario for him is that all the other non-Romney candidates kind of collapse around him, so he can even garner more of the vote just based purely on add to his margin with kind of just anti-Romney voters. So maybe he starts getting 30, if it's just Romney Paul, maybe he starts getting 30% places. And he obviously wants to accrue as many delegates as he has.
And do what with them, Rich?
Well, I think he's going to use it to obviously augment his position at the convention, have a big speaking slot if he can. But picked up, and I'm curious what our colleagues here think.
Mm-hmm.
From one of the weekend debates when he was asked a third-party question, I've heard very much an implicit threat in Ron Paul's answer, where he would not rule it out, and he said, I have these very important issues that need to be taken on by the Republican Party. And I think we're going to see that implicit threat becoming a little bit more explicit, and Ron Paul is using the threat of kind of blowing up the Republican Party's chances in the general election.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP field. Mitt Romney in the lead, headed out of New Hampshire and headed south. and what they're talking, what they're prescribing for the country. Rich Lowry is with us today, editor of the National Review. Chris Saliz is with us from the Washington Post. Susan McManus joining us from Tampa, Florida, University of South Florida there, watching all this from a southern perspective. This was Mitt Romney coming out early last night to claim the crown in New Hampshire, criticizing the assaults on his record at Bain Capital that have come most recently from his own Republican challengers.
President Obama wants to put free enterprise on trial. Yeah. And in the last few days, we've seen some desperate Republicans join forces with him. This is such a mistake for our party and for our nation. The country already has a leader who divides us with the bitter politics of envy. We have to offer an alternative vision. I stand ready to lead us down a different path where we're lifted up by our desire to succeed, not dragged down by a resentment of success.
Okay, plenty to chew on there. And Chris Saliz, let me come first to you. I mean, there is, on the one hand, this sort of pure defense of the free market and free enterprise. National Review, very critical. Rich's outfit, very critical of those challengers who have gone after Romney on this. On the other hand, you've got a kind of populist republicanism out and abroad in the land that says, hey, let's have some jobs and some manufacturing. And, you know, that was Rick Perry's calling him a vulture on a limb, you know, chewing up the carcass for a reason down in South Carolina. Which way does this break as we head down?
There's no question there is a strain of kind of economic populism abroad in the country, both on the Democratic and the Republican side. Look, there's a reason that President Obama's numbers have moved up as he's embraced kind of a populist rhetoric and tried to draw a contrast with Congress on that. That said, the message and the messenger, I think, don't necessarily fit here. Rich mentioned earlier about Newt Gingrich, and Newt Gingrich does not seem to me to be the messenger for this kind of populist message. Newt Gingrich has many things. A populist is not one of them.
He sure grabbed onto it hard. Looting, he called what Romney
and he
had
will,
done.
And I think he will continue to do so. My thought, and it's not a guess, it's probably more of an educated guess based on some reporting, is that Gingrich feels as though Romney and Romney's super PAC, which is called Restore Our Future, basically cost him any chance at being winning Iowa and therefore winning the nomination, and it feels personally affronted and will do what he can to make life difficult for Mitt Romney going forward. But again, I'm not sure that Newt Gingrich as populist firebrand fits. It fits better with Rick Perry, but Rick Perry got 1% of the vote in New Hampshire, and his last South Carolina poll I saw is under 5% in South Carolina. Could Rick Santorum carry that? I actually think he may be the best fit. I think Santorum spends, in my mind, too much time, Rich mentioned this, too much time on long lecturing kind of answers and not enough time talking about his own background, which is somewhat hard scrabble, his, you know, the coal mine, that kind of economic populism. I think he's at his best when he's talking about that, and I also think it's something that could really resonate and draw a harsh contrast with Romney, where the message and the messenger would kind of align themselves. But
maybe Santorum is doing a kind of rope-a-dope with those long answers, because when you pare it right down to some of his stuff on the social issues, I mean, I saw him being chased around New Hampshire with people shouting bigot, bigot, bigot as he ran. Rich Lowry, are you suggesting Santorum as a conservative sort of let's coalesce here candidate because he was the one guy who did not join in the looting charge on Mitt Romney in Bain Capital?
No, I was favorably disposed to him prior to this whole episode. Mm-hmm. I just think he's an impressive and a very sincere guy, and the way he's handled the Bain thing is very characteristic. I mean, he said Romney shouldn't have said the line about firing, you know, that is prone to be misunderstood, but he understood it in context, and he's not going to attack Bain, I mean, because he's a principled guy. And on these answers, Chris is absolutely right. I saw him at an event at a barn in Hollis, New Hampshire, I don't know, 45 minutes out of Manchester, and someone asked him about Social Security. And he said, well, the other day I got in trouble because I gave an answer to Social Security that must have been 45 minutes long. I think he's exaggerating a little bit. The reporting said it was 20 minutes. I'm going to be much terser today. And then, you know, I measured it, timed it. It was 10 minutes long, you know. And he shouldn't be saying anything longer than 2 or 3 minutes. So there's still a little senatorial lack of discipline there.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Romney, very disciplined, as you point out, on that front. Let's go to Oklahoma, Blackwell, Oklahoma, and Matthew. Matthew, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just was calling to weigh in on Romney's win in New Hampshire. It is exciting for the party to see this debate continue. And really a long-time listener of the show and appreciate the coverage, but feel the Republicans, I am a Republican, we should look to 2008 and see how long the Democratic Party took to make their decision in the primaries. I'm not ready to say that Romney's my man, and we need to continue the discussion of who do we want to be our person out of the primaries.
If he ends up being the guy, Matthew, can you see the party really rallying around him? Would he rally you enthusiastically, or is he too, I don't know, moderate, Northeast, you name it?
No, he's not too any of those things you describe. I could rally around him. I guess I am a Republican, so I do support the party, but I do agree that we are very fragmented and, quite frankly, am interested to hear Ron Paul and his continued debate and his continued discussion. I'm realistic about who is rising to the top, but I'm not ready to call it over yet. And again, the Democrats took a long time to decide on Obama, and I think we'd be well served to do the same this year in 2012.
Yeah, quite right. They fought a long way before Obama came out on top. Matthew in Blackwell, thanks for calling. David in Columbia, South Carolina, where the vote goes next. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Greetings from South Carolina. For people that love politics, this is Christmas Day because we have there are five candidates in South Carolina today, or in the Columbia area, that are having rallies and things. So we're fortunate with a first in the South primary to be able to get to meet all the candidates and everything.
Yep.
Went and saw Rick Perry this morning. I'm very disappointed in him using the phrase "vulture capitalism." That has really definitely made sure that I will not vote for him. And I guess at this point I'm going to be voting for Rick Santorum because I think we conservatives do need to all join together around one candidate, and he appears to be the most viable at this point. And I'm not really against Romney. But I would rather have somebody who represents my values more than Romney does, as I can see.
So maybe Santorum pulls off a big showing in South Carolina and rises up. But if he doesn't, when do you fold your tent and go with Romney, David?
Well, I'm going to vote strategically in the fall. If Romney needs my vote to carry South Carolina, then we're not going to win this year anyway. So I usually vote Libertarian in the fall.
All right. Your strategy is singular there, and I wish you good luck with it, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more here from Providence, Rhode Island, and Janet. Janet, thanks very much for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm actually calling in because I was struck last night listening, and again this morning hearing Romney talk about the failure of one man over 3 years, and I thought, I wonder what we'll be talking about in 3 years if Romney's elected. These guys sound like gladiators sent into a large national amphitheater backed by huge money, their own or someone else's. And I wonder if they can really, in good conscience, or we can, in good conscience, support them as people who will govern in the nation when people who are food insecure or out of their homes are watching them on TV, and it's little more than a spectacle. It's very, very troubling to me to think about those ancient reverberations and wonder if American democracy has just become a spectator sport with big backers and pugilists who are or aren't ready for the ring, and when they're gobbled up, we'll simply talk about whether they have a glass jaw or they said vultured capitalism or...
Yeah. No, Janet, I know exactly what you mean. On the other hand, Mitt Romney is, you know, one of your more buttoned-down candidates. He was punching last night, but this is not exactly a sweaty guy in armor out there. What did you think of the way he presented himself versus the president? The president as, you know, somebody who's not conveying enough hope, someone who hasn't managed to fix the economy, somebody who wants to look to European capitals for his models. What did you think of that That attack, Janet.
I really resent that notion of European stuff because the continual effort by Republicans to cast anyone who doesn't agree with them as somehow other than American, not patriotic, mm-hmm. really rubs me the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But what Mitt Romney, who has not known one day of insecurity educationally, economically, or any other thing, could possibly know about the actual plight of the nation? And whatever you think about Bain Capital has produced the stadiums where Americans are now watching as gladiator fights go on in front of them that are not about governing. And by comparison to Barack Obama, Barack Obama's a community organizer who cut his teeth in Chicago in the street. I actually think those two guys represent very different champions, even if I stay with my own kind of discouraged model.
Yeah, Chicago, not exactly a European capital. Here was Romney on that line last night, saying he would offer the American ideals of economic freedom and a clear, unapologetic defense.
You know that our campaign is about more than replacing a president. It's about saving the soul of America.
Yeah.
This election is a choice between two very different destinies. President Obama wants to fundamentally transform America. We want to restore America to the founding principles that made this country great. He wants to turn America into a European-style social welfare state. We want to ensure that we remain a free and prosperous land of opportunity.
Mitt Romney last night. Chris Ciliza, what this line, a European-style social welfare state, it's in every Romney speech that I've heard him give for weeks, right. maybe months now. But I don't get it. I mean, what is he talking about? Look at Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush 1, even Bush 2. Is Obama really on some different planet from them? I would say not.
It's, first of all, Tom, you're right. This is standard issue Romney stump speech. He says it all the time. I think what it's getting at, and I'd be interested in Rich's perspective on this, mm-hmm. I think what it's getting at is the strong belief within the Republican Party that Barack Obama does not believe in American exceptionalism, that he does not believe that America is uniquely blessed to be different and in some ways superior to the rest of the world, that we are a special place, that he believes we are on the same footing as every other country in the world. You know, you hear another, Mitt Romney didn't say it last night, but another very common line is that Barack Obama wants to apologize to the world for us. And that is something that the Republican Party, as it relates to American exceptionalism, believes in very, very strongly. And I think if you...
But aren't these just memes dumped on him? I mean, there's more than one kind of exceptionalism. You can be more just. You can be more vibrant.
I agree. I think the problem is it has to be context matters. This is a speech that Mitt Romney mm-hmm. gave after winning the New Hampshire Republican primary heading to South Carolina. So
yep.
this is not necessarily Mitt Romney's, what Mitt Romney will say in 8 months, 6 months' time if he's a nominee. It's what he's saying. I mean, I think he believes it, but it's what he's saying right now because he knows that it is red meat for a conservative audience that he still has a lot of work to do to win over in South Carolina and beyond.
Rich, Mitt Romney clearly loves the magic of this line. He thinks that it's got mojo going for it, but does it line up with facts, Rich?
I think it does. You know, you look at the size of government and federal spending is about 24% of GDP. It's been bumping up against 25, and this is before baby boomers really begin to
But you
retire.
Know why it has spiked there. I mean, here Bush took us over a cliff on the economy, and Obama had that in his lap. Yes, there was huge spending in response to that, trying to stimulate the way out, but everybody was going to have to do something there, and it's not as though Bush didn't build a government. It's not as though, you know, there weren't generations of initiatives around social programs that Republicans had a full hand in.
Well, I mean, this is a big disagreement. I mean, you seem
is
to be
it?
Of the view that government should just steadily grow.
No, I don't. But I'm saying,
never be pruned back and
prune it back. But isn't to call him a European? Isn't he in line with a whole lot of your Republican Party's own history in governing?
Well, I don't think any Republican would have passed Obamacare. I really doubt any Republican would have passed
George Bush's drug package in Medicare.
Well, that was much smaller scale than what we're talking about with Obama. And look, you know, I think what Republicans want to return to, and this isn't in any way radical, is the size of government that we had at the end of the Clinton years, about 18%, I believe, of GDP, and tumbleweed wasn't rolling in the streets. In fact, it was a pretty good time
for America. And I think the case Romney is making is if you have this level of government, if you have unreformed entitlements and you have baby boomers beginning to retire, you are going to work your way towards European level, kind of European style government footprint on the American economy, and he's going to make the case that's going to make us less dynamic and less free.
Yeah, he's clearly going to say that, Susan McManus. But I mean, on the other hand, yeah, that's where we were at the end of the Clinton consecutive 4-year terms. And then we go into Bush 1, and you've got a period of sort of off the hook, maybe financial capitalism and war, and pretty soon the economy and the budget's in big trouble. Can that really fairly be put on Obama as a European social welfare dude?
I think a lot of what the European issue is about is people are watching the euro very closely. Let's face it, a lot of people are invested in the stock market. Mm-hmm. They see what's happening in Europe, and it comes back to the main point, which I think we tend to forget a little bit in the discussion about alternatives, et cetera. But the every single poll for 2 years now has shown that the economy and jobs trumps everything else, swamps everything else. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen in these early states, and I can assure you you're going to see it in Florida as well, is very high up on that list is also the concern about the federal debt. And so people look at Europe and they look at the economic problems here and they see the struggles and they see one country tending to have to bail out some of the others that are not carrying the weight. And that's what it's all about.
Well, I mean, whatever the facts, that may be a very savvy way of framing it, because Europe is almost certainly going to be struggling with its situation right on through the year and right into November. We will watch this play out in South Carolina and Florida, your backyard there, Susan, and right on across the country as the debate unfolds. So grateful to all three of you for being with us today on the morning after New Hampshire. Susan McManus at the University of South Florida, thanks very much for joining us from Tampa, Sue.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Chris Saliza with The Fix at The Washington Post. Chris, you're great. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
And Rich Lowry, swinging a big stick in the GOP circle there, editor of the National Review. Rich, thanks so much for your time and insights today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.